Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
When Tillamook ice cream beckons you to the freezer aisle, which irresistibly creamy flavor do you choose? While you're thinking, try not to fuck up the glass. Tillamook ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
I would like to have you on the Dork Forest if you ever want to dork out about anything.
Absolutely, sure.
Like shutters? Look at the shutters behind you.
I'm only halfway dork on a lot of stuff. Like, I know I'm familiar with many dork things, but I'm not fully into them because I have commitment issues. So,
fair enough. And as the pre-production document says, pick 1 to 5 things so okay. that we can meander the world of all the things that you like
fun.
That you're enthusiastic about just a little bit.
Fun. Oh, and by the way, this podcast has already started. I'm going to use all this because that will work as a plug. This will work as a plug at the top. Hi, everybody. Yeah. You're listening to the 3 questions with our new cold open attempts. Pretty great, huh? Really catches you by surprise. Pulls you right in. I'm Andy Richter, and I'm talking today with the very, very funny comedian, world traveler, Midwesterner, Jackie Cation. Hi.
Hello, and welcome to... I feel welcome. Thank you for having me.
Good. Yes. You're from Wisconsin, right?
I am.
Are there many Armenians in Wisconsin?
There's a good 300 to 600, I would say. My brother knows all of them.
Really?
Yeah. I just talked to him, and he was saying how he went to Chicago to visit a factory. Guy likes factories, my brother Russ. And and the Armenian church in wherever he was outside of Chicago was right across the street from his from the factory. And the guy said, "Oh, do you know the priest?" And Russ was like, and so I rattled off the guy's entire family name, and it felt like the end of a movie where it's like, how did you get this job? Well, you know, my mother's name is Ellen. And you're like, your mother's name is Ellen? My mother's name is Ellen. And so my brother's always working the angle of yes.
When you came out here and to this being one of the most Armenian places in the country, was it weird?
I was like, for a long time, I counted how many Armenians I would meet a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I literally, in Wisconsin, everybody thought it was a Baltic swordfish. And so I'd be like, I'm Armenian. And they're like,
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds good with garlic butter, I bet.
But the crazy thing is there would be the guy at, who changed my oil, the woman at the bank, the barista, the restaurant, you know, there were, and people would say, you're Armenian. And I would have to say Wisconsin Armenian. We've already melted. I'm so sorry. I can do food and church.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I bet it's like, you feel so not Armenian around them.
Right. Because, I felt the most Armenian and then I moved out here and I'm like, what was the line? I would say, look deeply into my eyes and I'll sell you a rug. And in the hopes that they would literally shut up. And then I once did a benefit for essentially, it was one of those fake, like plant a tree in Armenia, but it was really stick a tree up the ass of Azerbaijanis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just said, oh, okay, I'll do a benefit for Armenia. And then I read the paperwork. Like there was a brochure at the benefit. And I was like, no.
For the cause.
No. Wait a minute. I went to Barbara over at Flappers and I was like, both of us need to do a little more research. And because I'm not a, I
was it
I
for was, buying guns or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for arming,
Right, for arming the Armenians. And the thing is I I was not, there are two branches of the Armenian church, much like every culture in the world. This yeah. joke works for every culture. An Armenian man was stranded on an island. The first thing he did was build two churches. So there was one that he didn't have to go to and he could be angry at or whatever. That's the premise and joke, right? Right,
sure,
and sure. And so I was raised in the non-political, casual church of the Armenian apostolic, you know, very non-tashnak, and it was, and so whenever someone asked me to be political about the Armenian situation, I say what my dad always said is like, am I moving back? No, I'm surrounded by political things that need fixing all around me in this country. Yeah. I can't fix their problems as well.
I do love, because I live in Burbank, but it's like the diaspora has blanketed this area. and I actually really love it because I love being around. It was sort of like when I was in Chicago and there'd still be little pockets of really creepy Germanness, like people that like really strongly still were a German identifying, and bars that like when you walk in and I look like, you know, the fucking Pillsbury Doughboy in a blonde wig, and I still get the look. I still get the like,
foreigner.
Who are you? You know, but I do love, and I mean, the Armenian stuff isn't. I just love being in a culture that's so strong and being held onto so much, and it does not belong here. Like, it's one thing to say, you know, like Mexican culture or Latinx culture is here and it's a different culture. Yeah, but it belongs here. Like, more so than we do, it belongs here, you know, that culture.
Right. It all comes from the Spanish conquistadors.
Yes.
From the 1500s.
Yes, and this was Mexico before it was California.
Yeah, you know, like, and so it's like a Native American, Mexican, Latin, Spanish, you know. Yeah. Right. And I thought you were going to say, I love the Armenians because I'm a big fan of lamb.
That too, honestly, no problem. Except I've always heard that like it's what's good about Armenian food is what the Lebanese gave them. Like I heard someone a Lebanese person say this once.
Well, of course, a Lebanese person would say that. It's you know, it was great when the Turks were marching the Armenians across Syria when they added, I don't know, Moroccan spices into the. Thanks so much for that.
Yes.
That is hilarious.
Let me get some of this cumin.
You know, and I have to say that I'm from outside of Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is so German and so Polish.
Yeah.
That it has that sort of vibe to it too, where you walk into a bar and you're like, it'll be literally like when I was a kid, when I was a kid and they would tell
Milwaukee, we understand.
I was weaned on Pabst and Hoffs.
Yeah. The daycare is different there.
but they would literally, the Polish guys would be sitting around telling each other Polish jokes. And if you were like, well, that seems kind of mean to the Polish, they would all get mad at you.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, seriously, you're not helping your own cause here.
Right.
Yeah.
That is, the prevalence, I always wondered if it was a regionalism of the prevalence of Polish jokes from my youth to where they don't even seem to be. Like, I feel like there were Polish jokes in Reader's Digest when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, where it was just so commonplace. And now they don't seem to exist. And it's always born out. Like, it's also, too, like, oh, the whole root of Polish jokes and that they're, you know, not mentally capable is largely due to the fact that their intellectuals were slaughtered.
Like, right.
What a funny joke.
Hilarious. Right. And I remember the justification, I think, was they talked about the cavalry trying to fight the Nazi blitzkrieg.
Yeah.
With the Polish cavalry against the tanks of the Nazis. And sure. I was just like, yeah, that's not funny. That means that a bunch of dudes and a bunch of horses all were murdered.
Yeah. And also, too, who were like cavalry wise, at one point, one of the world's best.
Right. One of the greatest.
Sorry, they weren't, you know, they didn't industrialize to become a war machine. Shame right, on them.
They were busy drawing trees, happy trees. Anyway.
Yeah, Polish was the other one in Chicago where there were, it was absolutely striking that people along Milwaukee Avenue had lived in this country for 20 years and could not speak a word of English and were and had a completely full life with work and church and community.
Family and community. Didn't matter.
You don't need English. Yeah.
You don't need English. I'm going to the grocery store in Polish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So good for them.
I had one of my, I worked in production in the, while I was at film school, I started working in production in Chicago on television commercials. And we were shooting a commercial with Mike Ditka. And we had a production manager who was kind of a brown noser. And he overheard Ditka saying to his manager or whatever, oh, there's this restaurant, Staropolska. Is that around here? I'd like to try to see if we can go to that place. I've always heard it was good. So he comes to me and says, listen, I overheard Ditka say something about this restaurant. Maybe you can go find it. I look in the phone book because there's no computer. I look in the phone book. I see an address. I go to drive out to Milwaukee Avenue. And at this point, I don't really know the city that well. I grew up in, you know, Yorkville, 60 miles west.
Yeah.
And I'm asking people on the street, do you know where Staropolska restaurant is? And it's just one person after the other of no English, no English, no English. And I finally found it just like by, because I walked and there's a little tiny sign, Staropolska. I'm like, oh, okay. And I ate there many times after because it was fantastic. But I, good so work, I get, you. I use a payphone because again, no cell phones.
Right.
Get on a payphone, call back and say, and it took me a while. I was like, because I didn't know exactly where it was. Yeah, I found it. It's right here. Do you want me to get something to go? And he goes, no, no, we're almost done with lunch back here. And I was just like, it was one of many of those kind of errands.
It is.
But,
yeah.
But I got a good Polish restaurant out of it. You know what I mean?
True. True.
Went back and many, many times. It was fantastic.
I was just on Milwaukee. I don't know Chicago very well. I was raised. It is amazing. I just went to Chicago last weekend just to work with Maria Bamford. Right.
Yeah.
And we were on Milwaukee Avenue at the Den Theater. And I'm going to be back there again with Lori Kilmartin in April at the Lincoln Lodge. They're both on Milwaukee Avenue.
Buy your tickets now.
Get them now. They're not for sale. It's a one's over.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I was raised literally to hate Chicago.
Yeah.
And it was such a weird thing. Like I had such a good time in Chicago for the first time because previously I had only worked the club there, right? The downtown club and the Rosemont club. And there it's a club that has been there for, I don't know, 50 years maybe.
Yeah.
And they've never cleaned the place. Right. and the staff is infuriated. And there's like the vibe is that, you know, people were raped in corners.
Yeah.
And so I was like, no wonder I hated Chicago. I need to work other places.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went on the architecture tour on the boat. I went to a writer's museum.
It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful city. Yeah.
The people were nice. It was a delight.
It's probably, though, that colloquial thing of like Milwaukee is safe and manageable and Chicago is big and scary, you know?
Right, right. And Chicago is so psyched about itself because it's a cool city.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee's like, well, we're a cool city. And you're like, no. No, you're a large, small town.
And it's one of those one-sided rivalries, too, I'm sure.
Right. It's like the people in San Francisco all mad at Los Angeles and the it's people like, in Los Angeles going,
really, yeah.
No, I like San Francisco. Why are you mad?
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful place to live. It's, you know.
You've chosen wisely. Yeah, it is a delight.
Good on you. You should be happy.
Yeah, it was when I moved to Minnesota to do stand-up, one of the most confusing things because I was
always
from,
a wise move.
It was a wise move. I love
I know,
it.
I know, I'm kidding. And, it's just like when I moved to Minnesota to get into show business, you know.
Oh, completely. Actually, I started doing stand-up in Madison, Wisconsin, and all of the other comics I started with moved to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm going to move to where they're not.
Yeah,
It wasn't that I didn't. It wasn't that they were horrible. It was just I was sick of hanging out with them.
I bet. And also, it's easier to steal their jokes that way.
Oh, so wink, good. You should, oh, my God. Eric Alver wore pajamas on stage. It was his hook.
Okay. Let's get into the biographical stuff. How many kids in your family?
Six.
Six? Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a lot of kids. And where do you fall?
I'm the youngest. My youngest. Yeah, my mother is a very, very Irish Catholic and just kept pumping them out. And then I was born and then she died and I didn't kill her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I picture her, Andy Richter, in a heaven that has no children. That is her idea of heaven. There's not a 10-year-old. There's not an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, yep. a 2-year-old, or a baby.
Everyone wipes their own whatever it is.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. She gets to be 16. She gets to be 25. She gets to be 30.
How old was she when she passed?
33, the age of Christ.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Coincidence? Yes.
Yeah, and John Belushi and Chris Farley.
That's right. That's right.
And I think also like Jimi Hendrix. There's like a bunch of 33s. Maybe even Jim Morrison. Something about that.
If I were a numerologist, I would care. It's the thing is, she is so I mean, she passed away and it was terrible actually. It was a drug driving accident. And
oh my gosh.
My parents were separated. I had 7. I was just turning 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was 33, just turning 34. And
she had fucking 6 kids by 30 goddamn 3.
Yeah.
Bananas.
Yeah.
I can't even. Oh, my God.
Right.
I can't even imagine. Your egg is just kind of getting cooked at 33. You know what I mean?
When I was 33, I literally had like a. This sounds hippy skippy, and it was. I had like an epiphany year, right? Where I was just like, am I going to go the way of my mother? Or am I going to grow up? Because I didn't have children. What I did was I had essentially my mother's youth, right? Like I got to party. I got to do stand-up comedy. I got to go around and just have a good time and travel. And
live for yourself.
Yeah, I live for myself. Yeah. And when I was 33, I was like, well, this is where she died. Do I, you know, and it wasn't conscious. I only realized after that year that I was like, well, this is the year. It was a big year of change for me.
Yeah.
So, but I have 4 older brothers and an older sister. And one of my favorite stories is that my sister, when she was born, because it was 4 boys, then my sister and my dad's mom, my Armenian grandmother, said it one time to my sister when she was like 8 or 10, it was so great when you were born because I was like, oh, finally a girl, someone to take care of the boys. And my sister's, my sister goes, you're thinking of someone else.
Oh, boy. Man, they really did good internalized misogyny back then.
Right. It was just baked right into the cake.
They really, from the get-go.
From the get. And it was... but everybody's, it's so funny because my mother was literally such a child, right?
Yeah.
Having babies. And my dad was a baby, not like his whole thing, like 50s dad, right?
Yeah.
Where she was 16, 17. He was 18, 19, right? When they got married.
Yeah.
And he joined the Navy and he would just give her his money every week, because that's what his dad did with his grandmother.
Was he stationed somewhere else, or were they living together when he was?
They were living together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and but he would literally like, you raise the kids. Here's my check. I gotta go. And I
put aside $10 for beer and horse races or whatever.
Oh my God. My father's an aluminum siding salesman, right? And so he sold awnings and stuff. If you ever go around and see these awnings that have little spears on them where the spear is broken off on one of them, they were a brand called Kenron. And my dad would always talk about how he kept just a box of those spears in his trunk.
Yeah.
And he would drive around if he was broke and look for broken spears and walk up to the house and literally just one off sell them for lunch money.
Wow.
Yeah. He was he's always working
all of the money to your mom.
Right. Who, by the way, had no financial She didn't have any financial skills.
Right, of course not.
Right. She was a child. So yeah. She would essentially, she would send our laundry out. Because six kids, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when she ran out of money, she would just throw our clothes into the closet. And there's several pictures of me where I look like I'm in like a pillowcase.
Yeah.
And a pair of tights. Then when she got the next check, she wouldn't pull the clothes out and send them off to be clean. She would literally buy us new clothes.
Wow.
And so when she died, there was a closet full of, this is horrible, but rotting clothes.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So she didn't know what the hell she was doing. And my dad just kept giving her money and she was like, okay.
And that is such a kid's way to deal with something.
Very much.
Put it in there and it doesn't exist.
It's gone. Yep.
It's gone.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And so, yeah. And so she didn't, and it was so funny because and when I say funny, I mean tragic, hilarious. But so my oldest brother was 14 when my parents separated and yeah. I was four. And my younger brother one time said this, and he may regret this, but it's very funny because he said, you know, there was a leadership vacuum when Dad left that Terry should have stepped in and taken over that leadership vacuum.
Terry, your older, oldest.
My oldest brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And my brother, Russ, who was 8 at the time, said, Terry should have, there was a leadership vacuum. And I said, he did take advantage of that leadership vacuum. He got laid and started doing drugs and had the time of his life. He never had to be home.
Right, right.
Delight.
Yeah. He's a perfect 50s dad.
Yeah, right. He was a 14-year-old boy yeah. who was like, what? Okay. I'm gonna sell drugs and get laid and gonna hang out with my 12-year-old brother and you know
wow
and it was so funny because they both sold drugs and they refused to sell me drugs because I was their little sister.
Wow.
But they would sell it to other, you know, 12-year-olds.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Sure.
And by drugs, is it just like shitty weed?
Yeah, yeah, just shitty weed. And yeah, I think some, and maybe acid and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was the 70s. I'm 100 years old.
No, I'm. It's the same. I mean, it was the same thing. Like the notion of like cocaine being around or heroin, it was just weed and mushrooms and acid occasionally.
My brother Phil hilariously one time told me, he said that his biggest dream when he was about 14 or 15 was that he wanted to be a drug dealer of renown in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Aim high, bro.
Exactly. And it's so funny because they all thought about joining the service as well when they turned 18.
Yeah.
And my father, to a person, like I never thought about it, but he told all of my brothers and my sister, he's like, you could just leave town, you know. You don't have to enlist. You can go find a shitty job shoveling sand for $2.50 an hour, just anywhere in the world.
Yeah, in Waukegan, Illinois. Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know why, but it's anecdotal day here, Andy
okay.
Richter.
Because yeah, sure. This is fun.
Christmas, I'm 19. I'm home from college. Because my brother Russ and my sister Darla were like, you're going to college. We were the first three to go to college.
Okay.
And so.
And where'd you go?
I went to Madison, University of Wisconsin. And so, but I'm home for college. For some reason, I'm the only one at the house. My dad comes home Christmas Eve. My stepmother is working Christmas Eve. She's a hairdresser. And my father remarried, by the way, right away because he had six children to take care of.
Right, sure, sure.
And but my stepmother's working Christmas Eve. My dad comes home in the middle of the day and I was like, hey, Dad, do you want to go get a cup of coffee or something? And he goes, I'm going to the track. You want to come to the track with me? And I said, is that going to be our father-daughter moment? He's like, I'm going to the track. You are welcome to come with me.
And he's got a good point. You know?
Right. So we get in the car. I think we're going to the track, Andy Richter. We are not. We're going to an off-track betting place in Waukegan, Illinois. The saddest concrete bunker.
Yeah, like the DMV, but sadder.
No windows.
Yeah.
The saddest 50-year-old dudes I've ever seen in my life, all just smoking. And Christmas Eve. And we're sitting there. I lose $20 on horses that I don't know what I'm doing. And
you can't even drink there either.
I could not because it was 21.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if there was a bar there or not. Because I was thinking maybe it was one of those ones that's just purely like windows where you bet and nothing else. There's no...
No, there was a bar. I wasn't actually... I went for the coffee. My dad had coffee. I had coffee. We had a cup of coffee together. So I believe there wasn't a bar.
Right, right, right.
But every time I drank in front of my dad when I was 18 to 22, he would be like, beer, huh? Classy. And I was like, what happened? What did you, am I
supposed to? Where are we? Look around. It's fucking Wisconsin.
Am I supposed to have an old fashioned? Yes. Which is what my stepmother used to drink.
Yeah, yeah. A mimosa?
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Well, just now... Speaking of stepmother, I mean, did you bond with your stepmother? I mean, did the loss of a mother figure, how did that?
She tried so hard.
Yeah.
She literally, Nancy Kashian, was both. I would put her up against anybody's biological mother for crazy and for trying.
That is a fucking, I'd buy 10 episodes of that. Crazy and trying.
Oh my God. She tried so hard. Completely unappreciated, but except for my grandmother, she was like, she saved your lives. She literally, she was, I used to joke about how she was a great loss to the Austrian army because she was 26 when my father married her. My dad was 35.
Wow.
My oldest brother was 17. And so my oldest brother fucked off right away. And went into, you know, looking drugs and then eventually
did he
found
move out the, or did yeah. he stay? Yeah.
Well, they put him in juvie because he was such a mess for the last 6 months of his childhood. And then he never came back and he ended up finding Jesus. And for the last 40 years has followed the meanest Jesus I've ever met in my life, Andy. As I said to Terry.
Wisconsin Jesus.
I was like, hey, Terry, could you write a children's book called The Meanest Jesus? Because that's your Jesus, my friend. And he.
Angry and trying to stop everybody from having fun. And
so mad. So yeah, mad. Yeah. And he, Arizona, started his own church. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but he is hilarious. But Nancy literally charts, graphs, French corners on the beds. It was like you had to be home by 5:30 was she would make us breakfast. Monday and Wednesday were egg days. Tuesday and Thursday were pancake days. Thursday had fruit in the pancakes. She was the worst cook in the world. She hated it.
Oh, wow.
So the pancakes were wet. And I hated pancakes until I went to an actual diner one time and had pancakes when I was like 25. I was like, no, pancakes are gross.
Yeah.
She would overcook the Monday pancakes and undercook the Wednesday pancakes Tuesday, Thursday. And Friday she had cereal because she had to go to work. She worked like a 60-hour week. My dad, there's a horrible, hilarious joke I used to do on one of my old albums about how she was having dinner with my dad. And my dad had an affair with my stepmother for 9 years. And you know what my dad had to say about it?
While he was married to your mom?
While he was married to my stepmom. Wow. He had an affair for 9 years. And when confronted, he had this to say, not 9 years in a row. And you're like, that's funny. You're still a dick.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
No, wait. He was having an affair against your stepmother with just some other woman.
Yeah. This woman, what the hell was her name? Because he married her. Because here's what happened. So I go to college. I'm the youngest, right?
Yeah.
So my stepmother takes my grandmother, my dad's mom, and his mom. His mom and her mom, they all four of them live together.
God.
And for like 2 years, 3 years, where she takes care of them until they die. And my dad's screwing around and he's being his best self. And so, talk about having to come to peace with your parents, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just have the one dad, right?
Yeah.
So I don't have to find things to like about him, but I have to find things to love about him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's 84. And
are they still married?
Oh, no. They got divorced and still live together like lesbians for probably a decade or 12 years until finally Nancy figured out how to get him. And so he calls me. And one day I'm talking to him. He's like, you know, she's going out with Bob. She's dating WW Bob. And I was like, who's WW Bob, Dad? He's like, he's a window washer guy I've been playing cards with for 30 years. I can't play cards with him anymore. And I said, oh, good for her. Nice one. And then we find out that Bob owns a window washing company. He's not a window washer. And he's a 70-year-old man. So everybody's 70 and 60 by this time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so finally, my dad moves out. And Nancy moves in with Bob. And Nancy passed away probably 10 years ago now. And my dad continues to live just and will live to be 100.
Yeah.
And so
did you continue? Yeah. I mean, were you close to Nancy? Is Nancy
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Were you close to her throughout her life? And even after your folks, after they split, you still.
Yeah. I was the only one who still really talked to her. But all my siblings would be like, how's Nancy doing? And I was like, you have her phone number.
Yeah.
Call her. But, and she was so funny because she used to tell us when we were kids that she never wanted kids.
Yeah.
And then she would say, but it's happening now. So you will learn to do your homework. You will clean things. And then eventually we will love each other and no one will know why.
Yeah.
So I swear to God, I get my sense of humor from Nancy Kashian.
Uh-huh.
But I get my timing from Elliot Kashian, from my dad.
Right.
Yeah.
It's always amazing to me when you think about the strides in mental health that are just sort of societal and how you don't really, I mean, it's still crazy stuff still happens, but just not like in our family. I had a relative who was married for ever and yet his secretary was his mistress and everybody knew. And he sometimes got drunk at family gatherings and would sing songs about his mistress, like little improvised parody songs.
What?
And, you know, and this is like Christmas gatherings and, you know, cousins standing around.
Wow.
It's so not that uncommon that there was this kind of madness. And then the way people get enmeshed to where they get a divorce and live together for 12 years.
Right, right. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's just like if they had just spent $12 on therapy, they would have probably been like, this is no way to live.
Civilization.
this is not right.
Civilization moves so slowly.
Yeah.
But you look, the fact that I think it moves quicker because of television and because of the internet.
Yep. Just spread of information. Yeah.
Right. Has sped up the civilization process exponentially, I think. Women's rights and then racial equality and just
gay rights are a huge one.
Gay
thinking
rights.
About how soon, how long ago, how not very long ago it was that
how far
people
we've
couldn't
come.
Get married. Yeah. Now
how
it's
far
like, yeah,
we've come from
yeah.
Will and Grace.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
just like Will and Grace, you look back at it and you're like, this is dumb and vaguely offensive occasionally, but for the most part, it was it was just making everyone
yep.
used to
yep. it. I watched The Birdcage with my daughter the other day. And yep. holy shit, is that like an insulting, the son comes home and says, Dad and Dad, hide your identities, you know?
Right.
I love you, but you should be ashamed of your core selves.
Right. The love that you have for each other isn't okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. My husband was raised by lesbians, actually.
Oh, really?
Like ground floor, been together since he was 12.
Wow.
And he tells a story about how his stepmom had two kids and his mom had a kid. And the three kids all lived together. And about a year into it, their moms told them that they were gay. And they said, yes, we knew.
We sort of figured.
You just have the one room.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
And
that's not roommates.
And but it was. But I do. I
he was
do
talking
like
about civilization yeah. being sped up. And I interrupted you.
Well, and like sexuality and gender. Right. You know,
yeah.
like all of my friends' kids who were 13 to 20 are all they thems. Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, am I transgender? And I'm, you know, Aunt Jackie over here, Grammication is like, what you're doing is you just want to be treated as you.
Yeah.
And then also trying to be an adult, right?
Yeah.
And so I love they, them. It's a new bit that I'm, it's on my new album. You guys get to it. But the, but the thing is,
not yet. Wait till the end.
Wait till the end. And so, but the idea of they, them is such a great idea. And I get it. Like this is something I haven't been able to work in yet, but, one of my friends, her 11-year-old daughter came to her and was all sad and was crying about how she doesn't know what her sexuality is. And my friend was like, thank God you're 11. Please don't have any sexuality. And when you do, let it be when you're 18 and then you don't tell me about it. So how about that? But it's this whole thing of like, you know how you can't cure someone of homosexuality or heterosexuality.
Yeah. Yeah.
You will know what your sexuality is when you get the Peter tingles, man.
Mm-hmm.
You, whenever that happens. And if it never happens, then you are asexual or whatever.
Right.
You'll figure out what your sexuality is as you, but all the kids in the world that are in my life are just like, I just want to be me. I just,
yeah.
you know, and that's what I love about a they, them, because everybody really just wants a cup of coffee and a job or an apartment and for you to get the hell out of the way on the
mm-hmm.
highway.
And to be looked at for their actual self, not as whatever sort of layover you put on them.
Right.
You know?
Well, everyone's a stalk of meat with a brain on top and we all have different sausage casings, right?
Uh-huh.
That's the analogy, right? That I'm working with and on with the bit.
Very Wisconsin.
Please do not use the sausage analogy for cannibalism. But we all meet the sausage casing.
Yeah.
We all go, oh, I wouldn't sleep with that sausage casing. I will only sleep with that sausage casing.
Yeah.
I hate that kind of sausage. And you're just like, no, meet the stalk of meat with a brain on top who just wants a cup of coffee or a job or you to get out of the way. And then when it comes time to think about sexuality, because that's all gender. That's how you want to be treated, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I want. Because when I was a little girl, and I was, this is an actual, I warrant, well, we're on a podcast, fuck it. So here's the thing. When I was a little girl, because nobody says they, them more than me. I
mm-hmm.
dress like the men that I'm attracted to,
mm-hmm.
right? So when I was a little girl, I didn't always want to be a little girl. Sometimes I wanted to be a little boy, and sometimes I wanted to be an adult woman. And for
mm-hmm.
two solid years, I wanted to be fucking Snoopy. And that's gender, right? I wanted to be Huckleberry Finn, Annette Bening, and Snoopy. And that's how I wanted to be treated, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're an adventure kid. You're an adult woman who's very put together. And
yeah.
you're Snoopy who gets to
And you're id. You're pure id. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, but I love, I love the they, them. It's just going to take a second for us to figure out how to talk to with about the syntax.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, and I mean, kids already get the hang of it. That's the thing. It's like my daughter's 16, my son's 20. That's not even an issue. They've been... To them, this conversation would be so tedious. It would be as if we were talking about like how to toast bread. Like who gives a shit, you know?
Right.
My daughter one time though, it is funny because my son's out.
This is
gay.
The Will and Grace. This is the Will and Grace of conversations.
Exactly.
I'm trying to explain it to old people.
Yeah.
So your son, go ahead.
Yeah. My son is gay and has been gay forever. Told us when he was young. And then we, like, as you said, we never talked about it again. You know, like we sort of, you know, it was like, because it was like, okay, yeah, that's your, he told us. And we're like, all right. And then he did not, you know, he made it very clear. No, you don't get any information from this part of my life. Cool. Fine. Get
please.
It.
Please.
Absolutely. But my daughter, when I think she was maybe 11 and my ex-wife picked her up from school one day and my daughter got in the car and she went, well, I guess I'm straight. And then wouldn't say anything more. That was all she said. Like it was a burden. And it's so funny because it's kind of like, yeah, sorry, right. Honey.
Well,
sorry,
exactly.
Yeah,
it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
you're the straightest white cis kid that in the world.
Right. And
so
also,
too,
it's like, and I mean, there's lots of women comedians that make this joke. It's like, yep. And you gotta be attracted to men. Sorry.
Like, so sad, too bad. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to put up with men. Sorry.
Right. Because, and it is.
But that isn't to say who knows what the hell, you know, I mean, I don't mean to.
And quite honestly, it's all so fluid, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And
it sounds so weird when I see people ask a little boy, you know, like there's like a 6-year-old boy. I bet he has a lot of girlfriends. Like anyone's still saying that nowadays. It's like, wow. That's a huge shift, you know?
That's a huge shift. You know what I would like to go away? She's going to break a lot of hearts.
Yeah,
he's going to break
a
lot of hearts. You're like, so you're saying that my niece is going to be an asshole. Please.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
she'll be attractive, which means she'll fuck people over. It's how it works.
That's how it works. So sad, too bad.
Okay, buddy, you're not wrong, but just still, it's a baby.
Right. She's a good-looking kid.
Yeah,
please
yeah.
leave her alone. This isn't a French cinema.
The worst person coming up, since we're anecdoting, the worst coming up to you and saying something about your baby thing we ever had was at like some outdoor restaurant in Malibu. My son was maybe a year old, was a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady came up as we're eating and said, how old's that baby? And we said, a year old. And she said, I knew it. My husband said that baby's 2 years old. I said, if that baby's 2 years old, there is something wrong with him.
Okay. Holy.
See you later.
Okay. Yeah. You okay, picking up thanks. The check, ma'am?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for planting that in our mind that our baby looks like a...
Like
there's something like an older baby with something wrong with it.
Great.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah,
thanks,
I don't
lady.
Want any part of that.
All right. Yes. So college, stand
up. Yeah. Stand up.
Do you have any other considerations of what you're going to do with yourself? Or do you just think, what the fuck?
There's so much
chaos going on.
A lot of talk.
By the way, before we get to that, because you're living in chaos. That's fucking crazy chaos that you're living in. And I imagine it's easy to feel unmoored as a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does humor play into that for you at that time? Does it start to become a coping mechanism? Not just for you, but for the group in general?
This is going to sound more tragic than it is, but I have very few memories before my mother died.
Yeah.
Mostly just me just blocking. And so, that first year between 8 and 9, I was a bit of a handful, but I was trouble. I was trouble. I got in so many fights when I was a little kid, when I was about 8. And when Nancy took me over, I would run out of classrooms and go hide underneath the secretary's bed, a desk in the because I knew they were going to send me to the principal anyway.
Yeah.
And so it, weirdly enough, it morphed into a lot. And Nancy Kashian was super sarcastic, very smart, very funny. But it was in most of her her jokes were sarcasm. Stand up. Most of her stand up was, and she was a huge fan of stand up, by the way. Her when I started doing stand up, she goes, "You're not the funny one. Russ is the funny one." I was like, "Russ doesn't get to be everything.
Yeah,
he doesn't get to be the, he doesn't. Yeah, he's also the smart one and the and the golden child.
Tell it to Jesus."
Exactly. But my Nancy Kashian's favorite stand-up comedy, and she really liked it, was Norm Macdonald.
Oh, yeah.
And when she told me that, I was like, you know, I do stand-up. And and she's like, anyway, you should do it more like Norm.
Right. Sure.
So, but the, but there was, like, so I had a lot of sarcasm when I was probably in fifth and sixth, I would say through probably fifth grade to ninth grade, my only coping mechanism was sarcasm.
Yeah.
And people thought that I was very funny. I didn't know it at the time. Like, I went to some reunion and people were like, "You are so funny in junior high." And I'm like, "Really?" Okay. Mm. And then when I was in ninth grade, I learned what friendship was. And I became, I literally a woman, a coach. I tried out for the track team and I read all the time. All I would do is read. And I read while I was trying out for the team. I read as I ran. My sister made me go out for things. She made me join things. My brother Russ and my brother Scott were both student council president and vice president in junior high. My sister was student council president in senior high. And so Russ and Darla were constantly making me do things. They're like, "Well, you're going to join debate class. You're going to take it." My parents were like, "You're going to take an instrument. Yeah. You're going to be in the band." And in junior high, I was like, "I'm going to quit band because I don't like the band director." And my sister's like, "You're going to stay in band because the senior high band director is amazing." And she was right. Yeah. And she was like, "You're going to go, you're going to learn, you're going to do this speech forensics thing. You're going to be in debate. You're going to be in student council. You're going to run for student council president." And I was like, "Please don't make me run for student council president. I'm not going to win." And my sister's like, "Well, what do you want to do then?" And I was like, "I'm going to be the power behind the throne. I'm going to join the school newspaper." And so I was editor of the school newspaper. And so she was like, that'll do. You have to. But it was like, there was so much. They were such scammers, my entire family.
Why do you think there was that high-performing thing among them? I mean, you know, do you think it was the shock of your mom going? Were afraid of being rudderless?
Well, I think with Russ, Russ and Darla are almost the same person, except for they aren't, right? They were diametrically opposed politically for years until the world went fascist. And then my brother, who was very conservative, was like, "Well, that can't be a thing that I am." And so he kept moving this. You know, my brother hasn't voted Republican since Obama, but he still considers himself a Republican.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I can't vote for that. Not a chance. And he's
God bless him.
I want to be conservative, but these people are nuts."
Yeah, yeah.
And so, he's sane is what he is. And it's a delight to be around him. but they are both super overachievers, right? Like, and the fact that, my father is very much a workaholic and literally speaks in sales talk and numbers and quotas and making the sale and closing the deal all the time.
Yeah.
So it was something that was ingrained. And so you were just like, "Well, obviously I have to achieve something. Obviously to close this deal," whatever. And he didn't care what you did.
Right.
He was like, I was like, "Well, I don't know if I want to do that." And he was like, "Well, you might as well try, because I'm going to make funny either way. Either you're gonna be successful and I'm gonna call you a big shot, or you're not gonna be successful." I'm like, "Well, that didn't work, did it?"
Right.
But in either case, you should try.
Yeah, you should pick which way I'm going to make fun of you.
Right. And so, like, my sister was the only 9-year-old I think I've ever heard of that used to look at remember in the grocery store, there'd be those newsprint housing
Yeah. Like classified ads. Yeah.
She would get those. Her hands covered in black newsprint as she would go through when we were, she was like 9 or 10 going, I would buy that house. And I'm like, are you planning on moving? And she's like, yeah, I'm not living here. What are you, nuts? And I'd like, well, because we shared a room. We were stacked like cordwood. There was only a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom. And she was like, are you going to, I was like, so you're going to move out? And she's like, you can come with me. And
At nine. Yeah. I'll need someone to sign the loan with me.
Right. She's like, I got to need some. And literally when she was 18, she moved out of the house and she got this job. My sister's gay. And we found out that she was gay when she was appointed to the gay rights. When she was 19, she was on the gay rights committee for the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was probably just an intern or something like that. But she was in one of the, it was a listing, right?
Yeah.
And she volunteered me to stuff envelopes for John Anderson in 1980. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she's like, take 2 buses to downtown at 10 o'clock at night. We're stuffing envelopes. We're making calls. And I'm like, okay.
Okay.
She does
liberal
it to
Republican.
Her,
sounds good.
It's she does it to her children to this day. She's like, really? You got to learn how to do a mailing. And they're like 11 and 14.
Yeah. Well, you know what? God bless her, though, for like, you know, pushing you. Because I do think, I mean, I do feel like I don't like pushing my kids, but I do feel like I wish I had pushed them more. Just, well, you know, it's you're lost in that sort of.
You don't know what to do.
You're lost in that sort of thing of like, well, do I respect their wishes or do I ignore their wishes? And it's where the border of those two things, what's the correct procedure? It overlaps a lot and it can be very sort of messy. So it's like, all right, you don't want to play Little League, but you really should go to computer camp or what, you know, whatever.
Right. Do you have any tiny, like my brother Russ's kids, if they had any tiny interest in anything, he would like, oh, you're going to baseball camp. I'm going to hire this guy to teach you how to pitch.
Yeah.
They are not athletic, my nephews.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
So stand up. When do you start to think this is what you're going to do with yourself?
I literally we never watched it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I never saw it. Nancy would occasionally, when I was in high school, she would occasionally go out with friends to go watch stand up. And I was like, what is it? And because she genuinely liked it. And there's a guy who still does stand up who met my stepmother when I was in high school. He's slightly older than me, right?
Yeah.
He's probably 5-10 years older than me, maybe. And I go to college. And at college, I don't know why I'm going to college. I'm just going, right? So I take these classes. My brother, Russ, picks all of my classes for a semester. He's like, well, you have to do this. I did this wrong. We're going to do this. I got a 5-credit C in science because he picked me a lab.
Yeah.
And I took 5th semester Latin because he's like, you'll get retro credits. And I told my Latin teacher in high school and she was like, she almost burst into tears. She's like, you're not good at Latin, Jackie. And I got a C in that too. I had to take French eventually.
Now, could you stand up for yourself in any way and say, I don't want to do this before he makes you take these classes? Or was that just not the dynamic at that point?
It did not. No, that is an excellent question because I never did.
Yeah. You just were used to it.
I was just used to it. And I was like, okay. Like he found me. I stayed in a women's co-op. He found me my housing. Darla was like, you have to fill out all of the grants and loans. And she had filled out all of the grants and loans by herself.
Wow.
And Russ and Darla helped me fill them out.
Right.
And she actually had to go to my dad because my dad was still claiming her on his taxes. And she was like, you have to refile, Dad, because I'm not getting the loans and grants I need. And he's like, well, why don't I just give you money? And he's like, and she goes, no, I will turn you into the IRS. And so he refiled. And then he claimed me. And Darla was like, tell him to refile. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And Russ is like, just make him give you money. And so, which is what Russ did.
Yeah.
And so my dad just gave me money one year.
Right,
and then
right.
the next year he did not claim me. So, cause he got caught. My father's excellent once he gets caught. And, the first year I go to college, I just go and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Second year, there's a comedy club that opens in Madison, Wisconsin, owned by Sam Kinison's brother, Bill Kinison.
Okay.
And so it's in the basement of essentially a Coke front on State Street, a pool hall, and just, it's 1984, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so my friends from the dorm are like, the co-op are like, all right, let's go see some stand-up. We sit in the second row. Sam Kinison's on stage. I don't know how to be out in public. I have friends at this point. And one of the
and
things
he's a big deal at this point, right?
Right before Letterman.
Wow.
Right before he blew the hell up. But he was a big deal. He was a cult favorite.
Yeah, people knew who he was, though. Yeah.
Right. And so I heckled Sam Kinison because I was drunk.
Of course you did.
What an asshole.
Classic.
This is an indictment every time I'm heckled.
Classic
I am just like,
JK.
It is. And so he can't shut me up. There's absolutely nothing worse than a woman heckler, even if you're a woman comic, even if it's me, because for some reason the audience is on the side of the woman heckler.
Good to know.
Good to know. And so eventually the manager has to come over to me and tell me to shut up. And he in the course of that, he says, open mic is on Sunday. Shut up. And so 3 weeks later, I go to open mic.
Wow.
And I swear to God, I've never done heroin, but it's got to be exactly what heroin feels like.
Wow. That because, first time and you did well that first time?
I did stand up every day.
Wow.
For 8 months until the club burned down. Thank God it was insured, Andy. So every day. I got a 1.8 that semester.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what do you do with that? What do? You say, fuck this college shit?
I tried to. And my sister goes, you have to graduate.
Right.
She's like, it's just 3 more years. And I was like, and then the next.
19-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, just and 3 more years.
It's just 3 more years.
Yeah, just and almost a quarter of your life.
And so I stuck it out and I did the, essentially there were open mics cause there was no club. 2 years later, there was a club that started that it was like a Funny Bone or something. And, that guy didn't know that I did stand up for the 8 months before that. And his name is Victor. And I think I ran into him the last time I was in Madison because now there's an amazing club, weirdly enough, owned by the guy who owned that building that Sam Kinison's brother's club was in. And whatever. So by the end of
did
college.
Fine in the fire. Had enough to keep going.
Yeah, he got, he owns most of State Street at this point. And the guy that owns Comedy on State, he's great.
Yeah.
He's actually a really good guy. And, so I graduate from college. I decide to do like one of those Europe things for 6 months. I do it poorly. Mm-hmm. I go to England. I get a dumb job. I do stand up twice in England, in London, at an open mic. And then I move to Minneapolis and I start over in 1990, right? Because when you move to a new town in stand up, you have to reinvent the wheel a little bit.
Yeah,
you're lucky if you're funny because then the wheel is greased a little faster.
Right, sure.
But you can't have a lot of ego with it because you're like, well, I was a big deal in Madison, Wisconsin, and now I'm in Minneapolis. And they're like, nobody knows who you are. And then when I moved from Minneapolis to LA, I had to reinvent the wheel again.
The same thing. Yeah.
And they're like, but I did it. You know, I've been doing it for a long time and you know, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I mean, well, but when you think about it, it's like I always think whenever in my career, I've been shooting something, working on something as an actor, and I have a note, you know, like, and I'm very sparing with them when I'm an actor. I know the protocol, you know, like if I'm a producer or writer on something, I'll pipe up. But if I'm just visiting or if I'm just there to say the words, I keep it to myself most of the time. There are times when it does, something comes through and I think this is going to affect the whatever, or it's affecting my ability to do my thing. So I'll have this note. And sometimes I have an authority figure thing anyway, but like when people, like the worst thing is when they kind of placate me or humor me or pat me on the head for having an idea. It makes me fucking furious.
Right.
But that,
well, it's because you look like such a, you look like such a nice guy. Like you look like the support guy and you're just like, yeah, but the brain inside of me is actually a leader. Well, so fuck off.
Thank you. And also too, it's like, I've been doing this a while. Like I kind of know the way things work. So
yeah,
you can trust me. I know, like I have a better ending for this bit or whatever,
right.
You know? And, but then I think like, yeah, but if I were that guy and some actor that I didn't know very well had a note for me, like say it was just picking someone off the top of my head, like Mandy Patinkin came in with like a comedy note for me, I would be like, wait, what are you talking to me? Like inside, I'd be like, Mandy Patinkin, I think I got this.
Yeah.
I don't need your input.
This is,
you know,
the one thing. Yeah.
And I'm just picking him as a, for instance,
yeah,
you know, he's a wonderfully talented actor, but in my area of like, hey, I got a note for how this could be funnier. You know, there's very few people that can come up and that I'll be the exact same to all of them, but my interior monologue will be very different from person to person.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's with the basic rule in stand-up is if you have a tag or you want to punch up somebody, you can offer it if you can do it well. Do you hear that train in the background, by the way?
I do. I'm so sorry. I love the sound of trains. That's all right. No.
Okay, good. And but the way you do it is important. You say, like, I think the first, God dang it, I always forget his name. Who is an amazing comic. He always played like the principal in Disney movies.
Oh,
Larry Miller.
Miller. Yeah.
Yes. So the first time
you open officious prick, you know, the dictionary to officious prick, and there he is, because it just, he plays it so perfectly.
Perfect.
You know?
And so I emceed for him in 92.
Yeah.
Right. And so I wrote a tag to one of his jokes that was literally, when I look back on it, it was a joke. It was topical. Right.
Yeah.
So it didn't have any length to it. But I had been taught how to sort of offer a tag or a punch up of somebody else's work. Right. Which is hands up. Show them your hands. You're not armed. And I was like, I have a tag if you want to your, and it was the Navy had opened a new base in a landlocked state.
Yeah.
And my tag was hell of a portage.
Yeah.
Which in Minnesota, everybody portages. Everybody knows it's a weird canoeing
portage. Sure.
Right. And so I was like, I have a tag, obviously take it or leave it. And so whenever I tag anything, I'm just like, I have an idea, a tag or an angle.
Yeah.
Do what you want with it, obviously. Because sometimes people will want to tag stuff that's so done.
Yeah.
That joke is on an album. I can't.
Right.
Please don't make me think about that joke.
We don't need to rewrite that. Yeah. Well, speaking of albums, how many albums do you have now?
I have four, and the new one is coming out November 16th.
Okay.
And also a video, also a special, you know, fancy 4K, and it'll all be on 800 pound gorilla. Yeah.
Couldn't afford the 5K, eh?
Couldn't afford the 5K. It was 5G though. And so
you said something gorilla. Is that the name of it?
800 pound gorilla is the album, is the label.
Uh-huh.
And it is, And that we're going to use, they're going to have the video on their website, and it'll, and if somebody eventually wants to buy it and put it on whatever, they can do that.
Okay.
Because I don't know. The business side of it is not my strong suit. I'm okay at it. I'm better at it than some people, worse at it than other people.
But
you know what? You get what you get. So, it'll, yep. And I'm pretty psyched about the album because it's been 5 years since I've had another album. Cause 2 years we had pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had to work on the album on Zoom shows and it was good. I mean, it was all right, but then I spent 10 weeks reworking the timing for live audiences.
Sure, sure.
And then we shot it and recorded it in Acme. It's called Staycation.
Okay.
Get it? Huh?
I get it. That's a vacation, but you don't go nowheres.
Right. And here's the good news about the name of that is people are going to know how to pronounce my fucking name.
Because
people like to ethnic it up. They like to cash in it. They like to cash in.
Cashinian.
They like to put extra syllables.
Yeah. Well, what's next for you? Where are you going now? I mean, do you have any plans to take over the world? Where are your dreams? What are your dreams?
I got dreams. They involve me learning how to do voiceover stuff because I got to do a little bit of that during the lockdown and it was super fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm wearing sweatpants.
Yep.
So good times. The podcasts are super fun. Then and I like the Dork Forest a lot. And I like the Jackie Laurie show is always a hilarious.
It's a very funny show. Yeah.
Laurie Kilmartin. Nobody riffs like Gil Martin. Yeah. She shuts you down.
Well, and also, you guys, it's also, I always love things when, and I think this is what people liked about me and Conan. They like watching a relationship. It's not just, you know, like David Letterman and Paul Schaefer, like, yeah, there's a relationship, but it's not really a relationship right. That's on display.
The last 6 years, you have watched Laurie Kilmartin and I, or listened to Laurie Kilmartin and I, actually become friends.
Yeah.
And it is.
Yeah, and the way that you compliment each other,
There were different comics.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons you wanted to start it, because a lot of people think that women comics are all the same,
Yeah.
And it's...
unfunny, if that's what you mean.
Right, the same, but not good.
Yeah, and, not but, funny. How about that?
How about that?
Yeah.
It's brutal. But her stand-up is so much different than my stand-up. And they're both, excellent works of the genre.
Yeah.
And so she has a new album out, too, called Corset, that is super dark. It's called Corset. Did you know that? I didn't even know this. It's called that because she was being squeezed to death by her mother and her son.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's become like the death comic, the dead relative comic.
Right. Nobody writes a good dark joke like her, except for Bamford. Maria's mom died, too.
Yeah.
And Maria's dead mom jokes are very, very... One of my favorite ones is something about how her mom was talking about how she lost weight in the last 2 years of hospice.
Uh-huh.
And she's finally under her Weight Watchers goal. And Maria makes some crack about how coffins will all eventually fit. And her mom goes, "That's not a good one, honey."
Well, let's run it by the crowd.
So there's a personalness to everybody's stand-up comedy that makes it just a delight. That's what I love about stand-up,
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, is it kind of just steady as she goes, like at this point, or is there like a script you're dying to do, or,
Well, I mean, I have always liked the idea of some sort of, sort of like a dramedy about my dad and my stepmother. Cause I thought that would be, remember the year that there were sitcoms where everyone was moving in with, there was an odd couple-y kind of sitch where people would move into I always wanted to move in with my weird parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have plenty of ideas, I had like a bosom buddies meets, the hell was it? It was like a Latin version of it where two young Mexican women have to dress like men so they can live at the Y.
Yeah.
Because of the housing problem in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
So and then they worked at like a closed captioning company. It was all very, yeah. Like, and then I always wanted to do a movie with like Wanda Sykes or somebody else where I was, it was like an action movie where we both worked at Target.
Yeah.
And then we home aloned it and like fought the good fight against the bad guys with like Nerf guns and stuff.
Right, right. But, in Target after hours.
And at some point I would get to cock a Nerf gun and go, "You're a hard target." And then there would be a love interest with like the pharmacy guy. I think actually Lori would be really good in that.
Yeah.
So I have, you know, I have ideas and stuff like that. But I want to do, you know, stand up is something I'll always do.
Yeah.
Voiceover stuff and video games and I want to write novels. I want to have written a novel, Andy Richter. Mm-hmm. Writing a novel, quite hard, quite difficult.
Right. Yes,
Brian Kiley has written a novel.
Yes.
It's looked like a lot of work.
It does. Anyway,
and so.
Also, it takes a lot of attention, like focused attention in one place for an extended period of time. And that has never been my strong suit.
Right. So, I mean, I want to do all the things, you know, but I know who doesn't want, you know, like Kumail, where like mm-hmm. a team came in and made him hot.
Right, right.
Feel free to come in and make me hot.
I have kind of given up hope on that one. I'm kind of like, I think I'm turning 55 in a couple of days. Yeah, probably
happy birthday.
That ship has sailed. Thank you.
You
never know. They might need, I don't know. Like there might be, you know, they might need a new Brian Dennehy. You know,
my brother Russ, who watches it and listens, he was just like, I love Andy Richter. He's like, he's somewhere between Tom Hanks and Jack Black. I mean, he could do any of those gigs.
Well, that's nice.
And I was like, that's a great casting suggestion.
Is he interested in getting publicist work? Because I could use a publicist. Well, what do you, what is the Jackie Cation known now? That like she really values, and you know, as opposed to the young JK coming out of Milwaukee.
I know the value of other people.
Yeah,
more than I do the definition. Like I've never been one of those comics who's been able to define success,
mm-hmm.
and I think I can now. You know, like, there's no end game. And I think that's because I come from salespeople, right?
Yeah.
With salespeople, you don't stop selling ever.
Just churn and burn. Yeah.
That's, you're always just looking for the good leads.
Yeah.
And if you get the good leads, then you'll sell and you'll make some money and you'll get to go and play blackjack or, you know, ride a horse or,
go to Waukegan to the, OTB.
Right. You get to take a kid to a zoo. I don't know, but you buy a bike. My version of success is very different. And I still want to do all the things that anyone would let me do.
Yeah.
But I know that I've already achieved, like, my life is amazing. I live indoors. My husband is a decent human being who I learn from continually, though sometimes I have to remember what I liked about it because I take advantage. I take for granted the things that when we first got together that made me want to hang out with him.
Yeah.
Now I take all of those things for granted. I'm like, well, he should be smart. He should be nice. He should be funny.
He should keep me entertained all the time.
What else is he? What's he done for me lately?
Yeah, yeah.
Calm down. How about those three things are great?
Right.
And we just keep going with that.
And then, you don't want new Coke. Stick with the old Coke.
Right. And I get to do stand-up. And I would like to do, you know, I would love to get into the fancier level of that. But I also know that the way that I get to open for Maria. And when you open for Maria Bamford, you get to write with Maria Bamford.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes my stand-up better.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're friends, so we also get to hang out, and so you're not driven mad by some feature who is mad that he's not headlining.
Right.
And then I get to feature for Brian Regan, And I get to be, I get to watch Brian Regan, and I get to see, be reminded what silly smart comedy looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And be inspired by that. So that's what I've learned. I've learned like the difference, like the, I've learned to define success when I never knew what it was.
Right. You think that's just from like the chaos of your childhood, thinking like you're on your own, although you weren't really, you had all that sibling support, you know, which was, probably felt more, less like support and more like being raised as an agricultural product.
Right. I will say this. It was support. We were raised to literally, it was like you had to, it was, there were like sayings and stuff that were dumb where you're just like, you have to, well, we're family. You have to support each other first. And you're just like, I don't have to support you if you hit me in my face. It's like a couple of my brothers were a little violent because my mother was violent, right? Yeah. And they've had to learn how to deal with their anger, just like everybody's going to learn how to deal with their anger. You know, if everyone can pause before you punch somebody, everybody else wins.
It's a it's a big win for the world, for the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. And yourself, because then you don't get locked up because you're an adult.
Yeah.
Because there's no hitting in grown-up land. I put hands on a heckler who had backed me into this corner after the show. And as soon as I touched the guy, he looked exactly like Leonid Brezhnev, by the way. But as soon as I touched the guy to push him away from me, I was like, oh, that's me. That's on, because he, he was doing, he was threatening me by getting super close, but not touching me.
Right, right.
But then I was backed up against the wall. And then I was like, you got to get away from me. And so I push him away from me, at which point security comes over. They should have come over a little sooner. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I get it. Red card. I'll take myself off.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then, but so as soon as I touched the guy, it's like, okay, I know it's my, on me.
Security was probably seeing if you would handle it, you know, just on your own.
That's unfortunate since that guy was 6'3" and like I said, looked like Brezhnev.
Yes. You could have grabbed onto his eyebrows.
steering him away.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this. And
thanks for having me.
Once again, the album's out November 16th, did you say?
November 16th.
And
it'll
be
everywhere.
Staycation.
Yep. Everywhere and, you get albums.
All right. Your albums. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I'll see you around campus. And we will be back next week with more of this, whatever this is.
I've got a big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It is produced by Lane Gerbig, engineered by Marina Pais, and talent produced by Galitza Hayek. The associate producer is Jen Samples, supervising producer Aaron Blair, and executive producers Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.